Boker Tov, welcome back to another ongoing series of Shirim Daf Yomi. We are now at the beginning of the 8th parak of Masechet Ketubot, and Daf Ayin Chet Amud Aleph at the very beginning of the Amud. And Amir Tzashem, in this podcast, we will cover the first Mishnah, and then the second Mishnah, which is attached to it, and the entire Gemara discussing it till Ayin Tet Amud Aleph. The topic of our Mishnah, these Mishnayot, is about the status of money that a woman owns and at different stages in her relationship with her husband at which she received that money, and the disposition of the money vis-a-vis her rights to sell it, her husband's rights to seize it if it's sold, etc. So we will recognize that there are really four stages here. One stage is what happens before Erusin. The second stage is, and of course, anything that happens before Erusin and then that she then sells before Erusin is, of course, none of the Baal's business. But stuff that fell to her before Erusin, before the husband had any association with it, and then its disposition after Erusin will be stage number one. Stage number two will be things that fell to her during Erusin and then that she tries to sell during Erusin. Stage number three will be things that fell to her after Erusin and then she tries to sell after marriage. And the fourth is things that fall to her after marriage and she tries to sell after marriage. Good. So the first status is, the first stage is things that fell to her before Erusin. Modim Beit Shammai uveit Hillel shemocher v'notan v'kayam. Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel agree, and we'll see what the reason for that statement is in the second stage. They agree that l'chatchila she may sell or give it away, and that is valid. The husband has no claim whatsoever. Nafla mishnit arsa. Second stage, if it fell to her after she became an arusa. Beit Shammai omrim timkor, Beit Hillel omrim lo timkor. So Beit Shammai says the same thing, l'chatchila she can sell. Beit Hillel says in this case, she may not sell. Eilu mei l'modim, she machrav not nakayam. But both agree that, b'di'avad, if she sold it, the sale is valid. Now, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, just to clarify what's going on, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, who were operating pretty much in the first half of the first century, had a discussion about this topic. Rabban Gamliel, this is Rabban Gamliel II, who is the head of the Sanhedrin after the Churban, which means about 30, 40 years later, and is a student of Beit Hillel, then has a comment about Beit Shammai Beit Hillel's discussion. However, we are only getting a record of it from a discussion that took place nearly 100 years later in the Galil, and that is from Rabbi Yehuda and a colleague of his. So we are going to hear different versions of what took place in around the year 90 in Yavne, between Rabban Gamliel and the Chachamim, in discussing the positions of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel from 50 years earlier, vis-a-vis this problem. So let's see. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. This is Rabbi Yehuda's version. Amru Chachamim b'nei Rabban Gamliel ho'il v'zacha b'isha lo yizkeh ben chasim. The Chachamim at this point, when Rabban Gamliel evidently reported that l'chatchila she may sell, even after Erusin, they reported, they supposedly challenged him by saying, hey, he's already been betrothed, why should he not have claim to the nechasim? Amar lahem, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabban Gamliel answered back, al ha'chadashim anu boshim, el'shtem galgalin aleinu ta'yishanim. We are embarrassed about the fact that even the newer stuff, which evidently means the stuff that falls to her after marriage and the fact that she may not dispose of that property after marriage, and you are adding to us a ta'yishanim. You're even trying to force us to disallow her control over the property before marriage. That's version, the Yehuda's version. Now, the third stage is, Nafula Mishanise. This is really the fourth stage. We'll skip it to the fourth stage. Everybody agrees, and Elu Velu, here's Beit Shammai Hillel, that if she does sell, and when something fell to her after marriage, and she sells it to somebody, everybody agrees that the husband can come and take it away from the buyer. And so the buyer, of course, caveat emptor, has to be beware that when he's buying it from a married woman, what the status is. Ad shelo niseit v'niseit. This is the third stage, which is if it's property that fell to her before marriage, then she got married, then she sold it. Rabban Gamliel says that if she sold it, it's valid. The implication, of course, is that she may not sell it, but if she does, it's valid. Now, Amr Chanin Markavia. I'm really fair, Rabban Gamliel. So according to Chanan Rakavia, a colleague of Rabbi Yehuda, this is the conversation that took place about 90 years earlier in Yavne, that they said to Rabbi Gamliel, Hoyel v'zacha b'isha lo yizkeh b'nechasim. After all, he's married. He now has rights over the woman. Should he not have rights over the property? It's the same wording, the same verbiage of the answer, but of course here it's a different implication, because here we're talking about after marriage. So Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Chanan Rakavia have the same conversation taking place, but they disagree about what the topic was that these formulaic statements were exchanged. Now, the second Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon Cholek ben Nechasim Nechasim. He comments on this entire piece, and he says that it is not true that a woman who sells property that is nichse melog, that it is always seizable by the husband. It depends on the kind of property. Nechasim hayiduin labal lo timkor v'machor v'natnah batel. If it's property that the husband knew about, and we'll see in the Gemara what that means, then if she sells it, it's invalid. Naf mishenan yiduin labal lo timkor. If it's stuff that's not known to the husband, then we say that it is. That she's not allowed to sell it, but b'diavad, if she sold it, it is valid, and we will see why in the Gemara. Okay. Now, the first thing that the Gemara is concerned with was why we distinguish between the Reish and the Seifa, where Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel disagreed about whether lechatchila she may sell the property that fell to her after Erusin, even though she's not yet married to the guy, but anything that fell to her before Erusin, even though she's now an Arusa, everybody agrees lechatchila she may sell. Why? Ma'ishta Reish lo pligi, ma'ishta Seifa lo pligi. I'm going to Rabbi Yanai. So Rabbi Yanai in the school of Rabbi Yanai gave the following explanation. Reisha bischutana flu. In the Reisha, in the first case, it fell to her, it was her own schut. HaKadosh Baruch Hu designed that she should get this property. She's not yet betrothed to the guy. So he has no connection to it. Seifa bischutana flu. In the Seifa, in the case where it's already in Arusa, it's like Bizchuto. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants him to get this kind of property, and so he arranged for someone in her family to die. By the way, how would a woman be getting property? Typically, if she has no brothers and her parents, one of her parents dies, or even possibly a grandparent would die, then she would be getting a Yerusha. Okay, now, Im Bizchuto Naflu, if you're going to argue that once they're betrothed, it's his schut, that is the reason for the property coming there, if that's the case, then it should really be sort of his property. And therefore, b'diavad, why should it be a valid sale? The answer is, we have to fine-tune that explanation. Reisha vadai bischuto naflu. In the Reisha, it certainly fell bischuta, because the guy's not even connected to her. Who knows who she's going to be betrothed to? Seifa, Eimer Bischuta, Eimer Bischuto. In the Seifa, it could be because of her, it could be because of him. We don't know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had in mind. So therefore, Lachatchila lo timkor, v'machavanat na kayam. Therefore, ideally, ab initio, she shouldn't sell. And post facto, if she sold, it's valid. Because we're not sure, really, whose claim on the property is stronger. Now, just to put a little bit of a spin on this explanation, which seems very illegalistic to be in the middle of a legal discussion, we could also look at it from terms of expectation, is that when property fell to her as an arusa, so when to the guy betrothed her, that's property that he had nothing to do with. And she's coming with it. However, when it's property that fell to her after she's already an arusa, it's sort of kind of falling into their potential household. And so therefore he has a certain expectation of some control over it, and therefore you might make the distinction. Just keep in mind that this distinction, of course, is only according to Beit Hillel. According to Beit Shammai, the two stages are exactly equal, lechatchila she may sell. And of course, as we'll see later on in Gemara, it's not even clear that Beit Hillel disagrees. All right, so this explanation is an if within an if. Okay. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Lo Lifnei Rav Gamliel. So now we quote the first version of the discussion of Rav Gamliel. Ibayalu Rav Yehuda alachatchilo adiavad. What was what was the conversation about? Was it about the idea that lachatchila she may sell it, in other words, Beit Shammai's position, or was it about the idea that b'diavad, that everyone agrees that if she sold it, it's a valid sale? What were Chachamim challenging, according to Rabbi Yehuda? Were they challenging her rights to sell, or were we challenging the validity of the sale? So we'll see from a Braita, which explicates the conversation according to Rabbi Yehuda. Toshma, Datanya, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Lifnei Rabbi Gamliel, Huil v'zo ishto v'zo ishto. As they said, after all, an arusa is his wife, and a nesuah is his wife. Zumechrabatel, if in Nisua sells the Minichsemalog, the sale is invalid, so this one should also be invalid. And then what happened? Amar Lahan, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Gamliel retorted, Allah Chadashim, Anaboshim, Allah Shatam Galgalim, Alein Otayshanim. We're embarrassed about the new stuff, meaning even stuff that fell to her as a married woman, the fact that she can't sell it. And you're trying to add in this other stuff? Now, what do we see from this braita? Shmamina diavad kamar. We can see from here that when Rabbi Yehuda's version of it was that the opposition to Rabbi Gamliel was the fact that b'diavad, the sale is valid. Shmamina. Good. Now, let's see more of this braita. Tanya, Amar Chana, Rabbi Chanani ben Akavya, who of course we saw in the Mishnah, but now we're going to see the full version. Lo kach eshiv Rabbi Gamliel l'chachamim. He says, that's not what Rabbi Gamliel answered to the chachamim. That's not what he said when they challenged him about the arusa. This is what he said. You guys are saying that huzu ishto v'zu ishto? Lo, imamarta min nesua. Sheken ba'ala zakam tziyatav maseh adav hafrat nedareha. You're using as a model a married woman that the husband has rights to her wages and he has rights to her metzia and he has sole propriety over her nedarim. Tomru ba'arusa she'in ba'ala zakam tziyatav maseh adav hafrat nedareha. Hafrat and Dara, we'd have to say sole control over Hafrat and Dara. Can you say that about an Arusa? The husband does not have any financial control over her stuff. She earns money, it's hers. She finds something, it's hers. He's not Chayav and Mizonot. There are no financial ties yet. There's just a potential financial tie that exists. So you cannot compare that. Amrulo, so then, according to Rechan Mekavia, the rabbis then responded after being defeated, Ram Gamliel. They said, Rebbe, Machrala ad shelo niseit. Let's say that she got it before she was married, niseit v'chakach machra, and then she's married and then she sold it. Mahu, then what? In other words, now they're saying, aha, but when she's in nesua, then you'll have to agree that the sale should be invalid. Amar lahanav zumachem notem rekayam, and Rabbi Gamliel answered and said, even such a woman can lechatchila sell it, which means that according to Rabban Gamliel, according to this version of Rabban Gamliel, he said that a married woman may lechatchila sell her nichse melog as long as there are things that came into her possession before she was married. Before she was married, noch. Okay? Now, Amrulo ho'il v'zachah v'ishah lo yizkeh b'nechasim. Now, wait a second. The Chacham now turned around Gamliel said, after all, here, the husband has already acquired the rights to her, Masei Adayim, etc. Should he not get the rights to the property? And here is when Rabbi Gamliel said, Amar Lahem, Yal Chadashim, Anu Boshim, Yal Shatim, Agagman, Amein, Otay Shanim. Here is when Rabbi Gamliel said, we are not comfortable with the fact that even stuff that fell to her after marriage, the husband can seize if she tries to sell it. And you're trying to roll it back? So according to Rechan Rekavia, the entire discussion was taking place on a far more radical plane from perspective of the woman's rights. Alright, now parenthetically, in this braita, Rechanan Makavi reported that Gamliel said that a married woman may lechatchila sell stuff that fell to her before marriage. In our Mishnah, the version was that Gamliel said that stuff that fell to her before she was married, and then she got married, is b'diavad a good sale. Remember when we studied the Mishnah, I pointed out that the implication of that is that lechatchila she may not sell. So Amarav Zvid Tani Mocher Nontan Rekayam. He said, "Yeah, actually, the proper read of the Mishnah is that Megamliel says Lachatchila she may sell, just like the Braita." That's Rav Zvid. Rav Papa Amari disagrees and says, "Lo Kasha." Really, there's no challenge. There's no contradiction. Why? Har Biyudal Libra Megamliel, Machanan Mekaviel Libra Megamliel. Our Mishnah and that clause where it says in Naflala Mishnah Niseit v'Niseit v'Chakach Machra. It's good. That's Rabbi Yehuda's version. Now, it's according to Rabbi Yehuda's version, Megamliel will cede the point that the chatchila she can't sell, but the avad it's valid. According to Rechanan Rekavia, Megamliel, who takes a far more radical position, would say the chatchila she can sell it. And the only thing he'll agree that she can't sell is if it fell to her after marriage. The question is, but then you end up with a very strange reality. Because if you recall, in the second clause of the Mishnah, we had a machloka between Beit Shammai and Hillel, if a property that fell to the woman after Erusin, if lachatchila she can sell it before Erusin, and Beit Hillel said not. So certainly Beit Hillel would say she can't sell it after she's married. So it would be only Beit Shammai. So you can tell them the Rechanan Merkava's position is like Beit Shammai. That's a little bit of a strange thing. Hachi Kamar, this is what Rechanan Merkava meant. Lo nechluku Beit Shammai b'hilal davar zeh. According to him, what Rabbi Gamliel said, again, is multi-generations. According to Rechanan Merkava, in the middle of the second century, what Rabbi Gamliel said at the end of the first century was that Beit Shammai Hillel, at the beginning of the first century, did not disagree about this. And that they agree that l'chatchila, a woman may sell, and it's a valid sale, of course, may sell property that fell to her before Erusin, after she's an Arusa, and therefore he disagrees with the presentation we had in the second clause of the Mishnah. Alright. Now, Rav Shmuel Davar Tavayu. So now Rav Shmuel come and turn things upside down a little bit. It doesn't matter whether it's property she got before or after Erusin. The husband can take it away, seize it from the buyers. Come on. So that is a far more, shall we say, conservative position, or a far more restrictive position on her rights than either of the versions in our Mishnah. The answer is, Inu Damri Rabotenu. There's a third opinion out there that we did not hear in the Mishnah, and that's called Rabotenu, a later Beitin, an anonymous Beitin, that Rav and Shmuel accepted. The Tanya Rabotenu Chazru v'nimnu. We have a brayta that says that Rabotenu, our rabbis, had a new session, and they voted, and they overturned the law, and they ended up voting as follows. Whether it's stuff that fell to her before marriage, or before Erusin, or whether it's after Erusin, and she sold it after marriage, the husband can take it from the Lekuchot. Now, Mishnah Seit Elu Ve'elu Modim. In the Mishnah, it said that if it fell to her after marriage, everybody agreed she can't sell it. So Leim Tanina Takanat Usha. That sounds like that's exactly Takanat Usha, which we had in the fourth parak. That whole series of Takanat Usha. So Chanina Usha Kinosha Isha Shemachrav Nichse Melog B'Chay Bala Umeita B'Motziv Yad Lekuchot. In Usha, there was a Takana that if a woman sells Nichse Melog while her husband's alive, that when she dies, the husband can then go and take it, seize it from the buyers. So how is our Mishnah any different than that? The answer is Matnitin B'Chayeha Ulaperot. Our Mishnah is talking about what the husband can do while she's alive. In other words, Usha predates our Mishnah. In Usha, the Takana was that if a woman sells Nichse Melog, then after she dies, the husband can go and seize it from the buyers. In our Mishnah, it means that the husband can even seize it while she's alive. And for purposes of getting back all of the perot that the buyer has been able to benefit from that field since he bought it. Takanat Usha begufa shel karka lachamita. Takanat Usha is about seizing the property itself, the deed on the property, and that's only after her death. Okay, the end of the Mishnah had Rabbi Shimon, it's really Mishnah Bet, had Rabbi Shimon distinguishing between known and unknown property. But of course he doesn't explicate what that is. Eloin Yiduin, Eloin Shenidin, so what's known and unknown? So Chanin, he makes the most obvious split in property, which is Yiduin, Makarki, Shainan Yiduin, Metaltalin. But there is a difference between real estate and chattel. Right? In other words, real estate is always, it's in the Chazim Sheshna Lachrayut, it's real estate, it's not movable, it's not hideable, and therefore it's something that is known, as opposed to chattel that can be hidden, that can be buried, that can be, moved around, and that's Einan Yiduin. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees, and he says, Amar Elu Ve'elu Yiduin Hain, both chattel and real estate can potentially be Yiduin. By the way, can potentially be Einan Yiduin. Ve'elu and Shainan Yiduin, what is not known? Any situation where the woman is here and an inheritance falls to her there. In other words, she has a relative who dies overseas and inherits. It's not anything the husband has awareness of because of proximity issues. That would still be called Einan Yiduin even if it were karka. A brayta that says the exact same language as Rabbi Yochanan, that if she's living here and an inheritance falls to her overseas. Now here's a story about something that's related, but it gets us into the issue of a shtar mavrechet. And just one note in advance is that Chachamim were always sensitive, and we've seen this so many times through Ketubot and parts of Yevamot, to protect the rights of the wife, and to protect her interests. And you can easily imagine a circumstance where such a thing might be abused. In other words, where the wife's interest might be abused. And we'll see a case in a moment. And therefore, they allowed, sometimes turned a blind eye and sometimes even engineered operations that would allow the wife to protect her interests in ways that seem a little bit taking advantage of a loophole. We'll take a look. There was a woman. There was a woman who wanted to hide her assets from her husband-to-be. And so why was that? Because she was a widow. She had a daughter, as we'll see. She has assets. And she does not want the husband to have access to the assets. Maybe she's concerned that he's marrying her for money. She wants to make sure that's not the case. Maybe she's concerned that he's going to abuse her assets. Whatever it may be, she wants to hide them. So what does she do? Katvatinu libarta. She wrote the entire estate, whatever she owned, over to her daughter. And then Instabavi Igrisha, and then sort of the predictable thing happened. She married the guy and didn't work out. She got divorced. So now she wants her property back. She came to Rav Nachman, the great Dayan. Kar Rav Nachman the Shtara. In other words, what happened is the daughter refused to give it back. So she went to Beit Din. The daughter came to Beit Din. And the daughter pulled out the Shtara that said, see, you gave me all the property. Rav Nachman took the Shtara and he ripped it up. And the mother got her property back. So now, Azal Rav Hanan the Kameh de Mar Ukva. So Rav Hanan was evidently there. He went to Mar Ukva. He was very upset. Amar le Chazi Mar. Take a look at this. Nachman Chakla Hechi Mikra Shtara de Inshi. Look at this. Nachman the farmer is tearing up people's shtarot. He was clearly not very impressed with Nachman, and he was willing to denigrate the Dayan, who was also the son-in-law of the Reish Galuta. And he's calling him a farmer, and he's saying he's tearing up shtarot. So now Mar Ukva was smarter than that, and he said, Amarle, Emali Izi Gufadu of Da'e Chiave. Why don't you tell me exactly what really happened? All right, let me find out what happened. Amarle Achim Achiave. So he told him the story. You're talking about a shtar mavrachet, a shtar written by a woman who's trying to hide assets? You know what the great Shmuel said? I am a dayan. And I'm telling you what will happen. If I get a shtar mavrachet, a shtar written by a woman who was trying to hide her assets, I'll tear it up. In other words, I'll protect that woman's rights, that she had the right to hide her assets. And now that she wants to get her assets back, nobody should stand in her way. Now, Amalei Rava Rav Nachman, Tamamai, so Rava, the student of Rav Nachman, turned around and said, why are you doing this? Is it because of the umdana, the general assumption, that nobody is going to give all their estate away to somebody else and leave themselves penniless? But that only stands to reason if she's giving it to some outside person. But a person who might give everything to their child. So Afiluach Rav Nachman answered, nonetheless, Malkam Barta Nafsha Difala. Even in the case of her daughter, her own interests are primary. And therefore she's not going to write everything over to her daughter unless she was intending it for some sort of an ulterior motive, not because she really wanted her to have it. And in this case we see what the motive is, to keep the assets away from the hands of her husband. Now, Meitave, we have a challenge to what Rav Nachman did. If a woman wants to hide her assets, and here you see Chazal are setting this up. What should she do? Kotevet Shtar Pasim. We had Shtar Pasim back in Daf Yud Zayin Yud Chet. She writes a Shtar Pasim, which is a shtar which is fictitious. It's made to look like the buyer is a wealthy person. He uses it to get himself into the country club. So what does she do? She writes a Shtar Pasim, a fictitious shtar l'achirim. Chum said, that doesn't work. The guy has the shtar, he can now laugh at her and keep the property. That what she has to write into the shtar is, I'm giving this to you from today, the moment I consent. And then, of course, if she never really wants to give it to him, she just never consents and says, I want it back. Now, so you see that she has to write a specific formula. And if she doesn't write that, then the other guy gets to keep it. So how's Rav Nachman tearing up such a star if it didn't have that formula in it? So very simple. If she writes everything over, then it takes the same rules as Manat Shchimira, which is, if you write everything over, it clearly was not intended as a real gift, it was for some other reason, and therefore she can ask for it back regardless of the formula. But if she writes part of his estate over, which stands to reason she may be giving a large gift to somebody, but keeping stuff for herself, then she has to write this particular specific formula, and if not, not. Now, v'ilo kanin ilukeach inu baal. So, well, let's think about it. If we're saying that she hides her assets from somebody, from her husband, and she does it by giving it to this other guy, but we're saying in reality the other guy never got it, then that means it should belong to the husband by default. It falls back to the husband. So how come, if she sells it, that the husband can't claim it back? So Amar Baye, Asa'um Kenechasim Shein Yedu'in Nabav, Alib Rav Shimon. They treated it like unknown nechasim, we had in the second Mishnah, and following Rabbi Shimon's route that says, unknown nechasim, even though she may not sell, if she sells it, it's valid. And therefore, since she hid it, there's nothing more unknown than that. She went out of her way to keep her husband's prying eyes away from this property. And now that she got it back, it doesn't go back to the husband. She sold it. That sale is b'diavad valid. Tov Mi'etz Hashem, we will pick up at the next Mishnah, Daf Ayin Tet Amud Aleph, Mishnah Gimel in the Perek, and continue with our understanding of the status of the woman's property.